This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Last month, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, issued a directive that would classify gender-affirming care for kids who identify as trans as child abuse. Medical professionals and LGBTQ advocates worry about the ripple effect of this Texas order and the harm it could pose to trans youth and their families. Here in Illinois, Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago provides gender-affirming care through their gender development program. Earlier this month, they released a statement in response to the Texas governor titled, "Gender-Affirming Care is Healthcare, Not Child Abuse." Joining us now is Dr. Lisa Simons. She's Assistant Professor of Pediatrics, Adolescent Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine and an attending physician in the Department of Adolescent and Young Adult Medicine at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago. She's also part of the Gender Development Program at Lurie and is a great person to speak on gender-affirming care. Dr. Simons, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also joining us from Texas is Elena Rivera. She's a health reporter with KERA, the NPR station in Dallas. She's been reporting on the governor's directive in Texas and speaking with trans advocates as well as healthcare professionals there. Elena, welcome to the 21st Show to you, and thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
So, Elena, I'm going to begin with you. What does this directive from the Texas governor actually say?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that this is actually not the first time something like this has been introduced in Texas. Last year in the legislative session, there were a group of bills aiming to ban this kind of care for trans youth by both arresting the parents who would be allowing them to do this and kind of delicensing doctors and physicians who would provide this care. That bill didn't end up passing in the legislature. One that did was about athletes and trans athletes in schools and what sports teams they could play on. But after that, after those bills didn't pass, in August, the governor sent a letter to the Texas Department of Family Protective Services to investigate whether gender confirmation surgery could be considered child abuse. The Department of Family and Protective Services said, yes, if we're performing these kinds of surgeries on people under 18, it would be child abuse. And then there was kind of radio silence for a series of months until basically right before the primaries and voting, the big primary voting day happened in Texas when both Attorney General Ken Paxton and then Governor Greg Abbott sent very similar directive letters to some of the wording of those bills previously that said, you know, not only are we directing the Department of Family and Protective Services to investigate families with trans youth who have provided some of these medical services, but also anyone who is a, you know, mandated reporter that includes physicians, psychologists, teachers, social workers are required to investigate this. And I'm sure Lisa will say this, but I think it's really important to note that most gender-affirming care directives are not actually about surgery for youth under 18, but both the governor and the attorney general did say that they're including, you know, hormone replacement therapy, puberty blockers in this case, which sometimes are given to youth under 18.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's kind of the overview.
Sure, no, I appreciate that, and I do want to get into a little later what specifically gender affirming care does consist of for this age group primarily. But Dr. Simons, what was your initial reaction when you heard about this situation in Texas?
Yeah, I think I've had a few reactions. It's very frustrating and disturbing. And I think, you know, I'm really sad and scared for the families and patients and youth, I should say, in Texas and those that live outside of the state.
And all right, well, we're going to need to take a break on the show in a minute here. So I'm just going to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the state of Texas, among others, the state of Texas issued a directive that would classify gender-affirming care for trans kids as child abuse. This is among a number of legislative and executive branch activities targeting trans youth in a bunch of different states, not, however, in Illinois. And so we're talking about the landscape nationally, how Illinois differs, and what gender-affirming care actually consists of. We're talking about that with Elena Rivera, who's a health reporter with KERA, the NPR station in Dallas, Texas, and Dr. Lisa Simons, who is on the faculty at Northwestern University's Med School and in the Department of Adolescent and Young Adult Medicine at the Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago. If you want to join our conversation, if you have a question or comment about this, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to pick up this conversation after a short break. You're listening to The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about gender-affirming care for the rest of our program today. As you may have heard, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, issued a directive that classifies gender-affirming care for trans kids as a form of child abuse. Medical professionals, people who are advocates for LGBTQ youth, worry about the ripple effects this Texas order could have across the country, and certainly the harm it could pose to trans youth and their families in Texas. We're speaking about this with Dr. Lisa Simons, who's on the faculty at Northwestern University's Medical School and an attending at the Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago and part of the gender development program there. Also, Elena Rivera, who's health reporter with KERA, the NPR station in Dallas, Texas. 800-222-9455. If you want to join our conversation, that's 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. So, Dr. Simons, let's talk about gender-affirming care. What, as Elena mentioned, in Texas, you read the governor's orders, you think it's mostly about surgery, right? But what does it actually consist of? How does gender-affirming care begin?
Thank you so much for asking this question. I think there's a lot of confusion about what gender-affirming care is. So, you know, to take a step back, gender-affirming care refers to a broad approach that really puts the well-being of children, of youth first. And so, you know, like you mentioned, by training, I'm a pediatrician who specializes in adolescent health, and my goals for any youth, you know, whether they're transgender or not transgender, are to develop and thrive, to be proud of who they are and to sail into adulthood knowing that they're worthy. So what is, you know, gender affirming care? It means that we, you know, create space for youth to understand who they are, be comfortable in who they are. And our job is not to tell someone how they're feeling, but to understand what the youth is thinking and feeling, to help them support, you know, the understanding of their gender identity, to explore that, and, you know, to identify the supports that they may need to live their lives. And that looks different from person to person. So for some, that might be, you know, giving them support, working with their families, with schools, with other relationships. For some youth, that may be assisting, you know, families through social transition. That might be, you know, changing name or pronouns or the way they dress. For some youth, it's really offering space and support exploring who they are and their gender identity. And for some older youth, it may consist of, you know, of medical care as well. So it's really, I want to emphasize there, you know, that gender-affirming care does not refer to any one specific, you know, specific intervention. It's really a whole host of supports that we put in place.
And it starts with conversations rather than sort of medical interventions, I gather. Can you talk about what those conversations are like with children, with their parents, when they're
beginning? Yes, thank you so much for asking that, because, you know, like I said, there's no one size fits all. And you're absolutely right in that so much of what we do are just listening. And really, when you know, when someone walks into clinic, we're really trying to listen to their story, listening to what they've been thinking and experiencing over the past months, often many years before they come to us. We're trying to identify, you know, is there distress or not? And if there is distress, we're really trying to understand where that distress is coming from. So we certainly, you know, don't assume any one trajectory for any person coming through, but it's really listening, you know, hearing from youth, hearing from their families what they've been observing, you know, since childhood.
So, Elena, can you talk about where on the spectrum of this, you know, this continuity of care, is that, I guess they would say, medical professionals would say, where does that become something that the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services would get involved at? You know, can it be at the conversation phase, at the listening phase, or does it require some sort of, you know, pharmaceutical or other sort of intervention?
I think the governor and the attorney general's directives are pretty squarely centered in, you know, hormones and any kind of surgical procedure. So I don't, at least from reading it, that it doesn't seem like they would be investigating at this phase. But I think the challenge is because this is a non-binding opinion, but it is being, there are active investigations from in Texas with families. There's just this culture and this sense of, well, I don't know what exactly is going to happen because I thought this bill didn't even pass in the legislature, but now there's material investigations into people that I know. It's hard to know exactly how many of those investigations there are because that obviously that data is dealing with minors. And so getting that information is a little tricky. It doesn't seem to be, you know, thousands upon thousands of families in Texas, but the percentage isn't zero. And so I think that this has kind of done what maybe the intention was, which is to really chill some of the effects, not only for families, but also for hospitals and doctors offering this care, because they could be implicated and potentially lose their license. It's all very up in the air right now in a way that's making people be really cautious. And the result of that is that centers and hospitals and family care practitioners who maybe were giving this care before are either hesitant to do so out in the open or have actually stopped it altogether.
Elena, what do you hear from people in the trans community in Texas about this law?
Oh, people are pretty tired. I think that, just like I said, this is a battle that they've been fighting since last year's legislative session. So it's not necessarily new, but I think I heard from some advocates, they kind of breathed a sigh of relief when most things didn't pass in the legislative session and they kind of got back to stuff. But I think another part of this tapestry is in Dallas, especially one of the centers called Genesis that was hosted by UT Southwestern and the Children's Hospital closed in December, kind of quietly, but that was one of the clinics that gave really holistic gender-affirming care for trans youth. People from all over Texas came to that center and it closed. And then later in the past couple of months, it's come out that it was because of political pressure and questions from Texas leaders about the care that people were receiving. But I think for most folks, it's been like one thing after the other for months and months. And then I think kind of the most folks were saying, well, this was a statement right before the Texas primaries to rile the base. Obviously it had political implications, but no one really thought that it was going to have actual investigative consequences. And that hasn't been the case. There have been families that have been investigated. And now what's cycling through the lower courts is, you know, is it legal to investigate families of trans youth? And I think over and over, the thing I've heard is when you have a family that is supportive of their trans child, that is such a precious and special thing. And families and people don't enter into these conversations about healthcare, about identity lightly. It's something that they talk about and really deliberate and debate for months and months before even maybe having that conversation that Dr. Simons was talking about. And so to have a supportive family who is already giving the everything that they could to their trans child, to now have that be interpreted and investigated as child abuse is devastating. There's so many barriers already to access this healthcare, to have a family that's supportive of a child's gender identity, and to level it up to, hey, now taking care of your kid could be considered child abuse is, it's pretty scary. I've had so many parents say, hey, I actually can't talk to you because I've seen and I've noticed that everyone who has talked to a journalist is being targeted by the state. There's a real sense of fear of what's going to happen, and not only what's going to happen, but will my kid be taken away from my family?
Dr. Simons, can you talk about that? I mean, I imagine, do you ever hear from young people who don't have the support of their parents for this kind of care?
Elena just said that so beautifully. You know, all of the things that I mentioned, you know, matter, the support of the services, I believe that, you know, we offer in our clinic, for example, but the support of parents, I mean, cannot be compared. The love and support of parents is so powerful and protective for all youth, but especially for transgender youth. And so to have that really, you know, I think you said precious, that's exactly what it is, to have the most powerful tool be called child abuse is really, I mean, it's unimaginable. And I was, you mentioned, I think the statement that my hospital, Lurie Children's, put out, I want to mention also that the director of our child abuse team was a part of that and said very clearly, you know, that this is not child abuse.
Interesting. Elena, what about the rare number of people, rare but not unheard of, who are born with one of the conditions broadly categorized as intersex? I wonder if the Texas law makes any accommodation for them.
They don't. And I think that has also been something that folks have talked about, that this kind of narrow focus on, you know, something that honestly, from all the physicians I've talked to, is not being given as an option for people under 18. That it narrows the scope of what these procedures can be for other kinds of folks in a way that is like not helpful for anybody's, anybody's ability to access healthcare that may change their life. I think one thing that we haven't talked about, but I definitely want to mention, is for trans youth in Texas, not being able to access hormone therapy or not being able to access gender affirming care, like is truthfully a life or death situation. I'm sure Dr. Simons can talk about this, but like the mental health impact of not being able to access this healthcare is astronomical. And every advocate I talk to has basically said, it's pretty clear that Texas leaders are not interested in the well-being of these children, because the outcomes of not accessing this healthcare are, you know, it's the suicidality, depression, anxiety, et cetera. And then there's plenty of studies that show, hey, accessing this healthcare actually has incredibly beneficial mental health outcomes for youth, not only in their teenage years, but moving forward in their life as adults. And that's something that I think kind of gets lost in this discussion sometimes, is even if you are a person who can access this healthcare, what does it do to you mentally to see and read and hear about leaders in your own state, your home, your community, saying these things about you, about your family, about the ability you have to access healthcare that, you know, might be life-saving? And that is, I think that's kind of the ripple effect that I keep hearing from folks, that even if this is something that goes away in the next few months, those effects of the mental health of these kids that hear this every day from the people in their community could be something that we deal with for the long term.
Yeah. And we've got just about a minute left. Dr. Simons, when abortion access became more restrictive in Texas and other states, we saw an increase in people coming to Illinois because the laws here are less restrictive. Do you expect to see an increase in families seeking that gender-affirming care in Illinois?
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And it's problematic because these services are already hard to access, even here in Illinois. it varies around the state, but the country, but I would say that, you know, access to gender affirming care is already something that's very limited, and we work really hard on our wait list, but it's really, you know, it's longer than what we want it to be. And so, yeah, we imagine that, you know, this is new, but that it could end up in people traveling farther than they certainly should have to. And we know that so many people just won't be able to do that. And what Elena said is so important. This care is often life, you know, life-saving. I can't underscore that enough. And I think that's what gets at how infuriating this is, that we finally have services and care available, and to take this away from people is really, it is horrible. And, you know, and again, these messages affect not only families in the states where legislation is being proposed, But in all states, right? Hearing a message of who you are is wrong or harmful or any number of things is the exact opposite of what we should want for any young person in this country.
I think that's a good note on which to end. Dr. Lisa Simons and Elena Rivera, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And that is all the time for our program today. We're going to be preempted tomorrow in the day after, at least during our live broadcast in the morning for the Ketanji Brown Jackson confirmation hearings. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll be back live on Thursday.